prerequisite preparation, general. Something that generally enables me to function better internally or be better able externally at getting more. The idea of at getting implies my ability, working at getting, that kind of thing. For example, being assured that I want, knowing what I want. It's a funny form, I'm not sure what to do with it, but the next way it goes like this, as if you were continuing a sentence. Is more important a better preparation than? With it, I can get more of what I want in particular. Love, happy environment, money, easy environment. Getting something more in particular instances, the motivation to want particulars, knowing the particulars I want, getting what particulars love can get, getting what particulars money can get, to get what I want. Self-extinguishing, self-fulfilling, to motivate others proportionately, to want what I want, to give what I want. Okay, here goes. We're going to have to try to find out the best way to learn for ourselves. Some of us are using fear. We don't have to, not here. Remember when we started last week, I suggested that you say yes, no, scream out, amen, brother, go to hell, you know, or anything. Please do it. No one did. All right? And we wound up with people who were confused, who didn't know where it was at, using fear of asking. Don't do it. Let us deal with your fear. Give us the chance. And just stop us at any point. And if we don't want to pay any attention to you, and we won't be any worse off than if you never said anything. At least you have the satisfaction of having expressed yourself. Anything else like that, just please say it. It might get you nowhere, but at least say it. It's going to really be a good place for that, you know, you can get nowhere. I'm going to be reading things, but I also have a whole lot of corresponding examples. Now, here's my observation. Unhappiness seems to always be used as a motivation to get what I want. Even when it causes the opposite to happen, it's still used as a motivator to make certain that I don't forget or lose interest in what I want. The example I have in mind is, for instance, I get angry at you for not wanting to be with me more. That becomes patently self-defeating. The more angry I get, the less you want to be with me. Yet my anger is to assure me that I really want you. That's the real purpose of my anger. To assure me that I really want you, and even to assure you. Even if it doesn't work, I have the assurance that it isn't for lack of my wanting. It's bad not to get what I want, but it's worse not to even want what I want. So my anger, my unhappiness, is to reassure myself that I really do want what I want. It's a protest. Unhappiness in this case is my protest to myself that I will never give up wanting. So that unhappiness in this case is my protest to myself that I will never give up wanting it. Wanting in general, just wanting, is much more important to me than getting, which becomes obvious in an example like anger. In situations like the above, apparently the need to keep in touch with my wants is stronger than the need to get it. I guess we can wonder why, you know, how could that be? Why does that come about? One reason why I may need to protest that I will never give up wanting is that so often in the past, after causing myself so much pain in similar situations, the only way I believed I could relieve the pain was to do exactly that, was to stop wanting it. And by believing that it wasn't really important to me, somehow. And so that my desire to give up is so strong, so I protest. The example I have here is, there were others in the past that I wanted to be closer to, remembering the context. I get angry at you for not wanting to be with me more, for not wanting to be closer with me. And yet the more angry I get, the further away you go. Why do I do that? To protest that I really want to be with you. Why do I do that? Because I need to keep in touch with my wanting. I'm scared. I have to get angry so I won't lose sight of what I want. Here's why. There were others in the past that I wanted to be closer to. I used so much unhappiness and didn't get the closeness that the way out of the pain was that I stopped wanting to be closer to that person. And then I sought a less painful relationship with someone else and eventually stopped having the original relationship that I wanted so much. You might remember that from your own life somehow. I wound up not wanting what I wanted. And I'm very aware that it's attractive to stop wanting in order to stop the unhappiness that I use in order to make sure that I keep wanting. I get angry at you for not wanting to be closer to me, even though that drives you away. I have to keep reassuring myself of that because I need to protest it so that I won't give up wanting. Because in the past and in similar situations, I said, okay, you don't want to be closer to me, I give up, I'll go to another relationship. To give up the pain, I have given up what I wanted, I sold myself out. And now I'm beginning to see that I'm going to have to do that again, that it's becoming more and more painful to me. The more I foresee that it's going to be painful to me, the more I protest, the more I get angry. The more that I see that you're going to go further away from me, in fact, the further away you go, the angrier I'm going to get. Because now it becomes all the more important for me to keep my wanting alive. The further away you get, it's going to be so much easier for me to give up. This dilemma is caused by instituting, in the first place, the belief that I will be unhappy unless I get what I want. And so all of this has to follow from it. This is all referring to motivating myself, to continue wanting. Yeah. This is all to motivate me to continue wanting. Mm-hmm. I have this fear of giving up wanting. Yeah. So I have to keep getting unhappy more and more. I said this dilemma is caused by instituting in the first place the belief that I will be unhappy unless I get what I want. The degree of unhappiness is in proportion to the temptation to give up wanting. Now that's what I mean by fear of giving up wanting. Our degree of unhappiness, the unhappiness that we feel, the anger, let's say in this case, that builds up more and more, is in proportion to the temptation to give up wanting. The more tempted I am to give up wanting, the more unhappy I'm going to get. This is why the more I believe I have to use unhappiness to get what I want, that the choice becomes more and more between giving it up altogether, you know, just forgetting the whole thing, or becoming more and more unhappy. Since I've coupled unhappiness with wanting more, right, I connect it. I want more, I'm going to be more unhappy if I don't get it. Since I couple them, the more unhappiness that I foresee that I'll have to use, the more desirable it becomes to stop wanting. The choice I am faced with is either to be more unhappy or to want it less. Since I want it and need to remind myself that I want it, I must increase my fear of giving up wanting. I must not be dissuaded. I must remain angry. I must be unhappy until I get it. I must either do that or give up. I cannot stop being unhappy unless I stop wanting, becomes the fear. And that's a horrible choice. I don't want to give up wanting, I want this. I want you to be closer, I want you to love me more, and I don't want to stop wanting that, damn it. See, that kind of feeling. So all I can be is unhappy. And so the feeling is like if a good thing, getting this good thing requires this, you know, unhappiness or whatever, the sacrifice in order to get it, I'll have to then want it. I'll have to then want the sacrifice. And there's a fear of not sacrificing, there's a fear of not wanting to go through that hell. There's a very strong temptation not to bother to go through all that unhappiness. And so then that means the desire to stop wanting it in order to avoid having to pay the price.
I don't understand why you can't stop wanting it.
Oh, you can. That's your other alternative, but you don't want to at this point. See, it was something you started out by wanting, and you won't stop wanting it unless you're really pushed to the wire when it becomes real painful. The point is, of course, for us to explore, well, is that the only way out, is to stop wanting? It's not. We know that. To stop wanting is not the way out.
So but that's when the unhappiness really works.
It doesn't work, but this is what we use it for. It works in the sense that it becomes so unhappy that we stop wanting it. But it works against us because we started off by wanting it. It works to keep us wanting. What you're referring to is just simply, it helps me to get what I want. It motivates me to just simply get what I want. And if I got it, well, there's no problem. If I use unhappiness to get what I want, it gets me it fine. The example I'm referring to is like anger at wanting somebody to be closer. It doesn't. It gets me just the opposite of what I want. And this is the sticky problem.
Why does the person institute this process?
Because wanting in itself is much more important than getting. What is it you really want is to be happy. So why go through that even, to get what you want in order to be happy? Well, that's what we're discussing. And perhaps by the time we're done, we'll see more clearly why any of this has to even be talked about.
I don't understand why wanting is more important than getting what you want, because the object is to get what you want, right?
That's what to start with.
So then why is wanting more important than getting it?
Because at that point, getting is not guaranteed. The only key you have to getting is to continue wanting. The getting is the goal. Your only hope is to continue wanting.
So for instance, I could be married to you, and I want us to be closer. And I put us through hell. I put me through hell, and you do the same thing, so we go through hell. Before you know it, we stop wanting to be closer, and I start looking at you, and you seem very attractive. My relationship with you is not at all so painful. And what do? I stopped wanting, actually. The only way out was to stop wanting. I love somebody, I wanted to be closer, and before you know it, I'm not with them anymore.
You're saying you can't really stop wanting.
Yeah, you can't really stop wanting, exactly. But you can force yourself to where that becomes the choice, either to keep up the pain, because you coupled it with unhappiness, either to keep up the unhappiness or to stop wanting. In those cases, you do appear to stop wanting. You'll start the thing all over again with somebody else. Prerequisite preparation, being assured that I want, is much more important to me than actually getting what I want. Because as long as I keep in touch with that I want things, and I keep my wanting alive, even though I'm not getting it, I have the hope for getting something else in the future then. I have the hope for getting it again, getting something, getting somehow. But I couldn't begin to get anything if I didn't start by wanting it. All of these wants that are used with unhappiness are what we for convenience call needs. But I'm calling them wants to show that they start off perhaps purely as a desire, as a want. But once we play the unhappiness game with them, you know, we're into needs and fear and then having to give it up and having to stop. And what we do to stop needing then is stop wanting. And we become really afraid of giving up. That's really what happens. In a self-defeating situation where my unhappiness is just not getting me what I want, what's really going on is that we're really afraid of giving up. That's why we keep on the unhappiness, even if it doesn't pay off. Because it's paying off in a larger sense. At least I'm not selling out. The hell with you, I'll leave you, but I won't sell out, stop wanting what I want. You see? I'll do that. I'll screw myself left and right, but I will not stop wanting what I want. And that becomes more important. Because if I stop wanting what I wanted, I'd even be screwing myself more. Here's an example, for instance. All right, my job requires me to work at things I don't like or with circumstances I don't like to keep the job or the money that comes from it, the benefits of the job. I must sacrifice, quote-unquote, other good things. Since it's attractive not to give up the other good things, I fear that if I want to keep my job, that I'm also kind of wanting to give up those good things, which I also want. It looks to me like I'm wanting, you know, bad things for myself. And I'm unhappy about my job, and I want to avoid that unhappiness. I don't like the circumstances. Yet I want the money. I'm afraid that I want money more than I want happiness. Sometimes it starts to seem. Hate the job and yet I keep going. And I'm also afraid that I want to quit the job more than I want the money, which I really want to be happy too. The more I am tempted to stop wanting what I want most, and what I want most is clearly the money, which was my motive for taking the job in the first place, then the more unhappy I become about the conditions that tempt me to quit. Therefore, I become afraid of my desire to give up wanting the money so much, and afraid of my desire to give up wanting better conditions so much, because either one would relieve my pain. If I could just give up wanting the money, I could quit and I wouldn't have any more pain. If I could give up saying I want better conditions, that would be okay too, and I would have no more pain. But I want to want, and I can't give up my wanting, so I have to have pain, I believe. I become more unhappy and eventually drive myself away from the whole situation. Since I want to keep wanting money, I want all the help I can get to motivate myself to go to work, to get that money. And I resent anything in that job that decreases my motivation. Lousy co-workers, long hours, traffic, whatever, right? I'm unhappy about anything that would make it easier for me to not want what I want. The reason I resent the things that go on in my job, and I hate them so much, is because they're making it very easy for me to stop wanting that job. And I'm scared of not wanting. My degree of unhappiness will be in proportion to my temptation to stop wanting. The more there is that motivates me away from my greater want, the more repellent factors there are connected to my goal, the more I fear I will give up. And then the more I will need to fear the loss of my goal in order to counteract the repellent factors and continue to motivate me. My unhappiness will be in proportion to what I think is required to counteract the other unhappiness I use to want or not want, the other factor associated with the greater desire. This associated unhappiness is what is meant by and constitutes the temptation to give up the greater desire. A final example, perhaps clearer even. I don't like traveling to work in the morning. The distance, the time, the traffic, etc. are things I'm unhappy about. I otherwise like my job and the money it gives me. The traveling factor constitutes a temptation to not go to work. In order to assure that I keep wanting to go to work, I become afraid of what will happen if I don't go to work. Now I institute another fear to counteract it. I become, like, say, afraid of losing my job. I become afraid of poverty. In order to get me out of bed in the morning to go through that traffic that I hate in order to get to my job. And that only happens. I only go through the fear, and I only start fearing losing my job because I've started tempting myself to quit it. Because I've gotten unhappy. The whole idea of traveling, traffic, etc. That's a temptation now. A slight one, maybe, but nonetheless, it's removing some of my motivation to go to work. And we're beginning with the premise here that what I'm most scared of is giving up wanting more than anything. And this is eroding my desire. It's eroding my wanting to go to work. So in order to assure that I'll keep on wanting, I become afraid of what will happen if I don't go to work. For instance, a fear of poverty.
If I have a fear of, gee, if I don't want that, I lost wanting like I lost getting, then where would I be?
That's what you're scared of. That's what you won't let happen. That's what unhappy. That's why you keep the unhappiness low.
But what if I did lose it? What if I woke up one day and I just don't want it anymore?
It doesn't happen. What you do is you just stop wanting.
You're dead.
No. We resort to, in order to stop the pain, then we stop wanting. The example that I gave before was, it becomes so painful that a way out is to just give up the wanting. In terms of a job, we make it so miserable that when we get fired or when we quit, we say, phew, at least I don't have to go through that traffic anymore. And I can stop wanting the job.
And what did you mean by the traffic jam making it easier for me to not want my job?
Right, it's a temptation. It's something I'm unhappy about, the traffic, right?
Oh,
and that's connected and associated with my job. So that's one of the factors of my job. It could be another factor at work, you know, your boss or something. Since you want the job, we're starting that you want the job more than you want to quit it. Now, if you want to quit it more than you want it, then there's no problem. That's not our example. And we're not using that. That's a nice, calm, easy way of doing it. It's not worth it, so I don't take it. Or I quit. You know, one doesn't go through a whole lot of shit. That solves it. You're staying in touch with what you want more.
So you've got the
See, the idea is to stay in touch with what you want more. That's what this is all about. To make sure that we keep wanting what we want more, that we won't go ahead and want less.
Would it be safe to say that any time there is a fear, that there is a correspondent wanting of something that looks very similar to the thing that is feared?
Or almost as good. Well, almost as attractive. It doesn't look similar necessarily, but almost as attractive. The desire to quit work is very similar then to the fear of quitting work, the fear of losing the job.
Okay, but my fear might be getting fired.
Right. I think the fear you would use is the fear of poverty, which would cover
something
both
like
of those examples. It would cover both, probably.
But the real wanting, maybe, was to not have the disadvantages of the job somehow.
Oh. Right.
Right.
The thing you really wanted was not to have more travel.
So it looks similar to the fear of
But in
exactly.
order to keep that from overriding
right.
the desire for money, you institute the fear of poverty. See, if a good thing, now for instance the job, if a good thing requires giving up certain, like say the conveniences of travel, in order to get it, I will have to want to give up those conveniences. And I have a fear that I won't want to do that. I have a fear that I may just not want to go through all that traffic. And I have a desire to stop wanting it. I have a desire to stop wanting my job. It's a building, growing desire. Every day when I go to work, slightly maybe it grows. And I have more of a desire to not want the job that I really do want. So it's the fear that I'll stop wanting what I really want. And that's a horrible place to feel. It's a horrible place to be because I want it. Again, this is what we've been talking about all along in the beginning too. The fear that I'll stop wanting what I really want. I want you to be closer to me. I'm afraid I'll stop wanting that. Now that's an example of the fear of giving up wanting. The second one is the importance of the desired thing. It seems also that the degree of unhappiness is proportionate to the importance of the desired thing. For example, I'll be more unhappy if I lose $100 than if I lose a penny. I'll be more unhappy if I don't get any food, if I don't get any food, than if I don't get a 7-course meal. Somehow it's in proportion. I'll be more unhappy if I don't get love than if I don't get supper, etc. What determines the importance of a thing? So now we're referring to comparative consistency as an example, the importance of the desired thing. Comparative consistency, the examples I just gave you was, it's bad to lose a little, and it's worse to lose more, right? It's bad to lose a penny, so then it's worse to lose $100. And then, it's bad to not have much, so it's worse to not have a little. The example for that would be, I'll be more unhappy if I don't get any food than if I don't get a 7-course meal. Maybe it's bad not to have a full course meal. So then, therefore, it's worse not to have any food whatsoever. What determines the importance of a thing? It seems that two factors are present. One is comparative or consistent judgment. This is what I was referring to. Comparative consistency. That is, for example, if it is bad to lose a little of something, then it's worse to lose more. That's how we decide what's more important. That's one of the ways that we decide what's more important, by this comparative method. Or, if it is bad to not get a lot of something, right? If I decide it's bad not to get a lot of this, then it's worse even to not even get a little of it. That's, again, I make the comparison. And that's how I determine what's important to me. Unhappiness, remember, plays with the game of things being more important than other things. So I'm trying to explore with you how we determine what's important, because that's what our unhappiness feeds on, the idea that some things are more important than other things.
By the phrase comparative consistency, do you mean comparing the consistency of the proportion,
right,
the difference?
Yeah, exactly.
The bad, worse,
yeah,
proportion thing.
I keep the comparison, but I have to be consistent. So for instance, if I find that I feel a little bad when you rip my shirt, I can imagine how bad I feel if you rip three of my shirts. I feel worse, would be my belief, something like that. Even though it may not have happened, I can predict how it happened, my unhappiness. Now this comparative consistency is pretty clear. That's the way we do it all the time. I mean, you know, if it's a pain in the neck to travel 10 miles, it's gonna be more of a pain in the neck to travel 20. If I hate getting up at 7 o'clock, I'm going to even worse hate getting up at 6 o'clock. Right? It's going to be a consistent thing.
But yeah, there are experiential things that blow things. Like, it's awful to take a cold shower. You think that and you know it. And then you take a cold shower and it's not awful.
No, that's not part of it. That would be the same example. It would be more awful than to take a colder shower. would be the example.
Oh, no, but like if you get
up
at 7 o'clock.
Changed. Oh, this could all be changed.
Getting up at 6:30, or though you believe it could be bad,
sure,
but sometimes really be very wonderful.
Of course. What will have changed there is the whole thing. For instance, it's lousy to get up at 7 o'clock in order to go to this job. It'd be worse to get up at 6 o'clock in order to go to this job. See? But it might not be worse to get up at 6 o'clock in order to go camping. So that would be another example. That's got another consistency.
Yeah.
No, that's not inconsistent. That's consistent with another comparison.
Yeah.
That it's better to get up earlier for the things that I want than for the things that I don't want. And so therefore it's worse to get up earlier for the things that I don't want more than for the things I don't want less. Where they'll think it's really bad not to have $100,000 in the bank. They'll think it's much worse to not even have $10 in the bank. And if you think you need $100,000 and you don't even have $10, you'll be worse off.
I can't have $50,000 and I can't have $10,000. Well, it doesn't matter if it's less than $50, I'll take it or leave.
Exactly. Which is why people won't put any money in the bank sometimes, because they can only put in $10 a week.
So
And if only if I could only save $10 a week, but what's the sense? Don't bother. Because if I allow myself to keep wanting, and if I want money, I'm going to have to be pained at the fact that I'm not getting as much as I want, and so therefore I'll just stop wanting to save altogether. All right, the other factor, it seems more complex, but it's actually a function of choosing something that in some way we believe leads to more of the good things. It's a prerequisite, a preparation for more of other things. That's another way that we decide what's more important. So in other words, given one area, in that area alone, we decide in terms of more or less. More bad, less bad. The examples I gave you, the part of consistency. But now, when you're comparing apples to oranges, how do you do it? See, it's good to have a lot of oranges, so it's worse to have less, right? If I stay with oranges, it's okay. But when I compare apples to oranges, now how do I decide which is more important? This is the other factor that comes into play. The factor of prerequisite preparation. In summary, it's like this. If I believe I can become more or get more or function better with, say, approval than with money, I will say then that therefore approval is more important to me. Or vice versa. If I think that I can become more or get more or function better with money than approval, then I'll say money is more important to me. Okay, so now this whole concept of prerequisite preparation is, I want the thing that will enable me to get more. Here, this room is a good example. I thought of this room. I bought a chair before I bought a painting. Why? Why is a chair more important than a painting? And in many ways, I could protest it's not. And they're two different things, but one enables me to get the other. And somehow, in some way, that the by having the chair and having a place to relax, then it would make sense to get the painting after, to then relax with the painting. It would, you know, that would be a prerequisite for the other. Why have a painting if you can't even relax it and relax with it? Kind of a thing. I may have a choice between staying up late and working late on something, let's say you want to prepare for something the next day, or going to sleep. Which is the better preparation for the next day? They're two separate things. But if I look at them in terms of preparation for the rest of my life, it's easy to compare them. And so we're always going to be looking at things in terms of comparative consistency or in terms of how they prepare us for other things that we want. This second proportion, that unhappiness equals importance, is only apparently different from the first, which is unhappiness is in proportion to the temptation to give up. They can be seen to be the same. For instance, the more important it is, the more I want it. But it is important because with it, I can get more of what I want. Right? The more important a thing is, the more I want it. But how did I decide that it was important? Because with it, I can get more of what I want. So things are important and become more important because somehow we judge that with them, we can get more of what we want. And that's how we decide what's more important than others. What I want is more. That's generally the rule. What I want is more, and what will give me the ability, either internally or externally, to get more. So since I become unhappy to assure that I get it, it follows then that I must become unhappy also to make sure I don't forget that I want to get it. In this frame of mind, it's a prime prerequisite that I never forget that I want more and more. And since I use unhappiness as a cause of remembering, I use unhappiness in order to remind myself, right? It's exactly the very reason why I might want to stop wanting more and more. This is all because I believe that I want more in order to be happier. Since happiness is really what I want more and more of, then I'm tempted to give up wanting more and more when I've coupled it with unhappiness or with pain. So like I might start this crap and I might start getting unhappy, and if I don't get what I want, I'll be unhappy. But since what I really want is happiness, and that's the reason I wanted the thing in the first place, I'm very tempted to give up wanting it. Because wanting it is giving me unhappiness. And I wanted it in order to be happy. Unhappiness is also used as a way to motivate others I'm skipping over using unhappiness to get what I want. When I get it, I stop being unhappy, and that's it. The unhappiness is self-extinguishing, and the wanting is self-fulfilling.
What happens when people use unhappiness and say they want something, then when they get it, they aren't happy?
Because now they want something more. And so they use unhappiness again to get what I want, the motivation of using unhappiness. Unhappiness is also used as a way to motivate others to give me or help me get what I want. And what I want is more, remember. The operative principle here is more. What I always will want is more, more, more. More happiness, basically. But since we're into unhappiness here, we're not really believing in happiness. We're wanting just more to make us happy. Unhappiness is also used as a way to motivate others to give me or to help me get. That's important, right? To give me or to help me get what I want. I think one of the reasons people want love is that because with love, then it helps me get. They give me the help that I need to get what I want. They make my environment around me happy. They cater to me, perhaps, something like that. So then I'm free to now use more of my own potential. You clean my house, I'll go out to work. I'll clean your house, you go out to work, and then give me money for clothing. And stuff like that, somehow we're helping each other. Since I believe others use unhappiness to motivate themselves, right? I will use it against them, too, as a way of getting what I want.
Right.
They believe my unhappiness will threaten their getting what they want. Then they may get unhappy and give me what I want in order to prevent my getting unhappy again, and thereby prevent their having to resort to unhappiness for the same reasons that we had already discussed, personal motivation, to motivate themselves. If I believe you're into using unhappiness yourself, I'll use it against you. And if I can threaten you that somehow if my unhappiness threatens to stand in the way of what you want, you'll try to prevent me being unhappy. Hopefully that's the ploy. So I'll get angry at you or whatever. It's a kind of blackmail. No, since you use unhappiness, and I want something from you that you won't give me, I'll use the whole principle of unhappiness against you. Since I believe that you're into using unhappiness, since I believe that being another human being, you probably are unhappy about some things, and I think I know what they are. And if one of the things that you seem to need is my approval, then if I threaten to be unhappy, then you'll start worrying about not getting my approval. And you're going to make yourself unhappy if you don't get my approval. So to prevent your own unhappiness, you'll give me what I want. There is an underlying fear which is disclosed by the method. It sounds something like this. If I don't get unhappy, it means that I don't really want it enough to try to get it. It doesn't mean that much to me. If I don't get unhappy, that's almost like saying it'd be okay with me if I don't get it. This means I won't want what I want. Like, if I don't get unhappy, that's tantamount to not wanting what I want. This belies the fear that I will want less rather than more, and that I just might not naturally want what is more important. I have an example. I want to understand without not understanding. That means I don't really want to understand better. And won't do anything to understand better. And there's the fear that I won't do anything to understand better. And that by being unhappy about not understanding me right now, those of you who are unhappy about not understanding me right now, are doing that in order to understand me better. And you're afraid you won't do anything to understand me better. And you're afraid you'd be saying, it would be okay with me if I don't. I fear not understanding. Because right now you want to understand, right? And I fear I will want more of what is less important. So I'm afraid I'm going to allow myself to not want. And less important, not be confused and just not think about it. That's sort of attractive now if you're confused. If you're not understanding me, it's becoming more attractive to you to just tune out. It's becoming more attractive to you to just not think at all of what I'm saying. And as that tempts you, you're going to get more unhappy and more confused about not understanding me. And you're going to start now trying to use fear to counteract that. You're going to start fearing not understanding me. And what's going to happen if you don't understand me? So we're afraid that we somehow won't choose the more important thing, that we won't stick with trying to understand. And what will lead to getting more. Another example is, I want to disagree with you and be honest about what I feel. Let's say I'm in a situation with somebody. But I don't want you to dislike me for being disagreeable. So I've got those two wants. Now, remember, I'm going to have to decide in my head which one is more important, right? So I've decided I can get more of what I want, that it's more important for me to get approval, in this case, than to be honest. Let's say that's the decision. It's the decision more people most likely come up with. Okay, so I want to disagree with you and be honest about what I feel, but I don't want you to dislike me for being disagreeable. And now I have to judge which of those two things I want. I want honesty and I want to be agreeable. Which do I want more? Which is more important? Which will give me more of what I want? Which will prepare me, either on one of those bases? Which is a better preparation for the more that I want? I decide approval is more important. Now, since I'm afraid, I may seek honesty. I become afraid. Now, honesty is very attractive, right? And that's tempting me away from the approval. I'm afraid I may seek honesty, which is less important to me right now, more than approval, which is more important. Since I'm afraid of that, I become unhappy and afraid of disapproval. Now I start becoming afraid of your disapproval in order to reassure myself that that's what I want, is your approval. I start off by wanting two things. Your approval
and
my honest expression.
Right. Okay.
I've made the judgment that your approval is more to my better than my honest expression. That can be a fine, nice decision. That doesn't have to be a problem. But I'm afraid that I'm going to have a real temptation to be honest. That desire to be honest, to disagree, to express my feelings, remember, is now what we were talking about before. It's a temptation. Honesty is attractive. And so I'm afraid I might do it just because it's attractive, and I might forget that what I want is your approval
more than I want to be honest. What did you really want more in this case? Was it
your approval. What I want more is your approval.
Well, how does it sneak up? I mean, how does it...
Because it's there. Oh. It's there. Because I also want to be honest. There's both factors. But since I'm into unhappiness, now again, this is only because I'm into unhappiness.
But if you were to motivate myself, unhappiness, you could
just
get both, right? I mean, it's
well,
possible or not.
Or I would know...
It would be okay if you didn't get one.
Right. Well, I wouldn't fear that I'd be screwing myself. No, the fear is that I'll screw myself. The fear is that I'll forget that I want your approval and wind up being honest. For instance, I have it written here. I don't keep the fear of disapproval in my mind. I'm afraid that if I don't keep the fear of disapproval in my mind, I'll blurt out something honest. Which is something I want. That's something I want to do. But at the expense of your approval, which is something I want more. So I'm afraid I'll screw myself. I'm afraid I'll get one thing I want and defeat myself and not get the thing I want even more. Because I notice that I want both these things. And especially the more I want the honesty, the closer they get, the more afraid I'll become that I'll get overcome by that, and that'll overcome my desire for what I really want most. If I'm into using fear to motivate myself. If I'm not just confident to know that I'm going to do what's best for me and I'm just going to get the approval if that's what I want and I have no temptation to be honest. But the whole idea of having the temptation to be honest, see, I believe I need all the motivation I can get to stick with my goal, which is to get your approval. And I resent any other attractive thing that would keep me from it. For instance, the desire to be honest. That sort of becomes more attractive, and I'm into resenting those things. I don't want conflicts. I want everything to be clear. I just want no choices. I just want to get my goal and work toward it because I'm afraid that I won't want it. So I want my wanting to be clear.
Yeah,
the way I make it clearer is by increasing fear. Why do we ever begin that? Where did it ever start? Why do we use unhappiness, etc.? Why do we use it in each particular incident? Because we believe in it. Why do we keep being afraid we won't have enough motivation? Because we keep giving up in the past. It's a cycle. It's cyclical. I've proven to myself that I don't have motivation because I've made things very painful and then stopped because they were so painful. Remember that example, I wanted to be closer and I made that painful so I gave up on you and went to somebody else. There was my proof to myself that I do give up on what I want.
When it's not okay is when you're still wanting it, but remembering how many times that has happened, coupled with the wanting it very much now, and realizing, oh, a lot of times I stopped wanting because of this, but this I know I want.
I'm not
going to
give up on this.
And that's when the conflict and the pain comes.
Sure, if you change and you say, hey, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. If something changes and it becomes not worth it, that's fine. But usually, things don't change, we start changing and it becomes not worth it. We become more unhappy about the traveling, about the traffic. And now it becomes less and less worth it to go to work. Yeah. But actually, if we didn't do the changing, maybe the traffic didn't get worse. It might have even gotten better.
And if we stayed with the it's not worth it without regret, then again it wouldn't be a problem. But
yeah,
almost everything we've ever decided wasn't worth it, we later decide must have
been. Must have been worth it.
Why did I think that wasn't worth it?
It's because why we thought it wasn't worth it. It isn't that we just simply decided it wasn't worth it. The evil motivation behind it is what kind of discounts it. Our cowardice of why we decided it wasn't worth
selling
it was because
out.
We've been giving ourselves fear and we sold out. That it's not that it really wasn't worth it. It's just that I made it so fucking painful that it became not worth it. See, so I'll start the same thing all over again with somebody else or another circumstance because I know that I'm the villain in this. If it's really not worth it, I wouldn't keep doing that sort of thing.
I don't know about all this. I just had this experience. I was thinking about something and I wanted to keep that thought. I was afraid I was going to start thinking about something else.
There you go.
So I lit a cigarette. Someone to remind me that this is what I want to keep thinking about, and this will help me not be distracted from what I want to be thinking about.
And
so
I'll never forget Will.
Right, the fear of being distracted from what you really want more. Exactly. And in this example I just gave, the fear was that I'll be distracted from wanting your approval into winding up being honest. And what I want is your approval even more. I'm afraid I won't stick with what I want. See, this is all under that heading, to motivate myself to continue wanting. This means I won't want what I want. This belies the fear that I will want less rather than more. I become afraid that I'll want the lesser thing. He just wanted two things. He wanted to remember something, but he also sees that it's distracting. It's interesting to be distracted. It's nice to think of other things. And he's afraid he's going to want that more than he wants to remember. But the remembering is what he really wants more. So somehow I have the fear that I will want, what I will want more is really less important. Now a corollary fear to this is that I will somehow, that somehow I won't know what is more important. Remember, this is all based on the fear of I won't continue wanting what is more important.
Well, what is the process that takes place where you're thinking that you're really not going to do what you want to do?
Evil, unhappiness, what do you want to call it? Lack of self-confidence. The whole belief in unhappiness. You're using that to motivate yourself. The fact that you would dare to think that you might not do what you want to do, you're using that to make sure you keep wanting to do it. You're giving yourself an extra motivation that you don't need, but you don't know that, because you believe you'll give up.
And a part of it I get is that when I do get what I thought I wanted, and it did not make me happy, then I believe I must have wanted the wrong thing, which can put me in a real panic. Justify my belief that it's possible to want the wrong thing.
That's the corollary that I'm getting to right now. The corollary fear is that I somehow won't know what is more important. Now, important, remember, our definition is that which will lead to getting more, right? It'll be a better preparation. And therefore, I'm afraid that I will choose the less important. I'll choose the wrong thing. But this fear I use is to ensure that I keep wanting the more thing, the better thing. And it is not as important that I get the more in this case, but that if I don't get it, that at least it's not a result of my not wanting it. If I don't know the best thing to want at a given moment, in other words, the way of getting more ultimately, then what becomes the most important thing, say I don't know, right, what's really the most important, then what becomes the most important thing is that at least I keep wanting to know what are the best things to want. So that if I can't know right now what the best things are to want, at least I must keep alive the desire to know what the best things are. Because otherwise, without, I'll never know what the best things are. This is the fear of making the wrong decision. Out of the fear of not wanting enough to know that I would want more if I knew. But the fear of making the wrong decision is that I become afraid that even if I knew what the better was, I wouldn't choose it. See, that I wouldn't do what is more important. I don't know what will lead to more. I don't know what's the best thing to want. Becoming an option practitioner, let's say, or becoming a psychologist, PhD and all. I don't know which will lead to more. I just don't know the future. I don't know, with the facts that I've got, which will lead to more for me, which would be the better prerequisite preparation for my happiness. Since I don't know which is more important to me, I become unhappy in order to decide. I fear that in the future, I may believe that the other choice, whichever one I didn't choose, would have led to getting more happiness. I'm afraid that I might regret my choice. I use that fear to help me. And I could have known it now if I only knew better. See, I fear that I'll say I should have known better. Now, not knowing now which is better to be, which is better to seek for and start working toward being an option practitioner, or PhD psychologist, I'm afraid that in the future I'll say I should have known better. In order to reassure myself that I really want the more, whichever the more is going to be, I must rack my brain and become afraid so that I will be able to say, I couldn't have known better, I did the best I could have possibly done at the time. Just so we can give ourselves the freedom to say that. In order to assure myself that I don't want to be self-defeating. See, I'm constantly trying to reassure myself, hey, I wasn't out to screw myself. That in case the future comes and it turns out that the other choice would have been the better choice, I want to be able to say, it wasn't because I screwed myself. It wasn't because I didn't let myself know. So I use the fear of not knowing what is more important to decide what is more important. So in order to assure myself that I don't want to be self-defeating and that I take my wanting more very seriously, shall I be an option practitioner? Shall I be a PhD psychologist? I take that very seriously. I take that wanting more. I want more, and I don't know which one. And I want to take that very seriously. At least I want to assure myself that I have racked my brain, that I've gone through every possibility. I use the fear of not knowing what is more important. So I decide, hey, I don't know what's more important, and I've got to know. I've got to know what is more important. So I can decide now what is more important. So this is the fear of making the wrong decision. Because what I'm afraid of is that the only thing that really could have accounted why I made the wrong decision is that I didn't really want to know what was the better thing for me. That's the only thing that could have counted. I'm really a self-defeating son of a bitch. And I don't want to see that in myself. And I'm afraid of seeing that. I use that as a fear. And I become afraid of making the wrong decision. Therefore, I may believe that there's always something to be unhappy about. That's why I'll believe there must be a reason why I'm unhappy. Because I will always want more, and if there's no reason to be unhappy, and if I don't come up with a reason, if I don't conjure up a reason, if I don't make up a reason to be unhappy, then there seems to be no way to make certain that I keep wanting more. That's why everybody's got a reason why they're unhappy, but it's all bullshit. Sure, I allow for each person's integrity and never push them, and everybody's got their own reason. But the ultimate reason is that even if there wasn't a reason, they want there to be one. And many, many times, always in my practice, we have come down to, I don't know, I don't have a reason, but there must be one. You know, there is no reason to be unhappy about this, but oh, I'm unhappy about this one. I'm unhappy about, and always unhappy about something. And coming up with a good reason. But it's never really a good reason when they explore it. So what becomes clear is that there always has to be a reason to have a reason. Always looking for a reason to be unhappy. Always wanting to believe that there's a reason to be unhappy. And this way, if I can always believe there must be something to be unhappy about, something, I have to be unhappy about something. That way, I can reassure myself that I want better. That's my way because I'm afraid that I won't keep wanting better unless I fear losing it. That's what unhappiness is all about. Amen, and that's the end of it. Something that generally enables me to function better is more important than getting the particular thing. It's more important for me that you give me a job where I can earn $100 a week for the rest of my life than if you just give me $1,000 right now. I would want the thing that would be more preparation and better preparation for what I want. If I believed the other way around, then I would want that. But we want the general, the thing that enables us to function better internally, so that's an emotional thing, or be better able externally, that would be a skill, a power of some sort at getting more. The two important things that we want on the general, the most important is that at least I assure myself that I want, that I keep my wanting alive by unhappiness. My unhappiness at least keeps my wanting alive. Then, if I keep my wanting alive, at least then maybe I can know what I want. And this is more important than, for instance, a particular thing. A particular thing would be to want a cigarette, to want a drink, to want to walk, to want clothing, to want, you know, anything in particular. I'll give up any of those. In fact, I'll screw myself left and right. I'll give up everything. I'll even give up life as long as I keep on wanting, and I won't give up wanting. I want what I want, and I want to keep my wanting alive. It becomes obvious in many cases that that's so painful. You have a phenomenon called, you know, deep depression, where a person just doesn't want anything. They're scared to death of wanting. Because what they want so much, and what we all want so much, is happiness. This is all based on that. This whole thing about using unhappiness. Using unhappiness as a motivator toward achieving happiness. So what's beyond all these wantings is the wanting of happiness. And that really can conflict with wanting when you're using unhappiness. Okay, now I gave you a model of categories of how we use unhappiness as motivation, right? Those are all various ways how we use unhappiness to motivate ourselves. We use it to motivate ourselves, we use it to motivate others. We use it to motivate ourselves to continue to keep wanting alive. We use it to motivate ourselves to get what we want, either to get it or at least to keep the wanting alive, the wanting. And it's not wanting it in particular, at least wanting something in general, just wanting. In my continuing to keep wanting alive, the most important thing is that I keep wanting, right? So what I'll use will be the fear of giving up wanting. Another way of keeping my wanting alive is to keep the importance of the desired thing in my mind, to decide that the thing I want is important. I create that by one of two ways, by comparative consistency or by prerequisite preparation. By the way, happy people do that too. Okay, but this is the way in unhappiness we pervert it, to use it against us. Certainly in happiness, we can change from bad to good. Good is to, you know, not lose a little, and better is to not lose more. Better is to have much, good is to have a little, or something like that, you know. But this is the way that we use it with unhappiness. And the major categories of that. Now, what I'd like you to do is you'll form groups now. First of all, the way you form groups. The most confused of you, all right? The most confused of you have an opportunity to be the most honest. The most confused of you choose to be in a group with somebody who you feel is least confused. So I would suggest that you identify yourselves, at least those of you who feel fairly not confused, who feel they fairly well understand this. Now what you'll do in your group is I want you to come up with unhappiness, an example of an unhappiness, and see if it fits, and to see where it fits. And then you can find out if there are any exceptions to this. And if this doesn't apply to certain kinds of unhappiness at all, and it just doesn't fit at all. So I want you to form groups of four, but this way. No more than one, like say if half of you are confused, no more than half confused people be in one group. You know, if possible, just be good to yourselves, that's all. And try to be with somebody who you think understands better. Seek them out. And you people who understand well, you try to be with somebody who you think even understands better than you, but also want people who don't understand as well of you, as you, so that you can explain. Now, when you form groups of four, one group will have five. Pick anything someone might be unhappy about, anything, and find out how it is used as a motivator. So you're going to get together in a group now to make this become real for you. Pick anything, anything that anybody might be unhappy about, and I mean anything, no matter how weird, way out, and how commonplace. Find out how it is used as a motivator. If you do that right now, you'll find out that you're practicing the method. You'll be devising the option method. If you do what I just asked you, you will all be inventing the option method right now for yourselves, without ever having been told what it's all about. If you just try to find out how unhappiness is used as a motivator, pick any unhappiness, try to find out how it is used as a motivator, you will be creating the option method. I think this is a beautiful example of learning by self-motivation. You will discover by creating something. The goal is to pick anything, common or uncommon, that someone might be unhappy about, and find out how it is used as a motivator. I'd like you to confront each other as individuals right now, in pairs. And I'd like you to say to each other, whoever whatever you pair up with, whoever it is you want to meet, to help each other get in touch with by saying for yourself, I use unhappiness to motivate myself. Okay? And let the other person say to you, how? See what happens there. Now, then you give an example. They say, well, how do you do that? And you say, here's an example. And you give an example. If a person doesn't give you an example, right then and there, right at that very moment when you say how, point out to them and accuse them of using unhappiness right then and there as a motivator to remember. And that's why they can't. Okay? And somehow get really deep into that experience. And that also is going to touch that whole thing about blocking who we are, about blocking about knowing who we are, and this peculiar kind of religion that option people come up with, about nobody's allowed to admit that they're unhappy about anything. You know, and maybe that shit will start to go away. Okay, so the idea is, I use unhappiness to motivate myself. Oh, really? How? How are you using it now?